Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Framed ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Last time on Framed.
So Brian never came up to you and said he had a problem with you stealing from the store?
No, not to me. Not that I can recall.
What was your relationship with Brian Carrick?
Colleague, employee.
Anything else?
A friend.
Anything else?
No.
Did you ever sell him drugs?
I decline to answer that question.
Did Brian Carrick ever sell drugs to you?
Yes, he did.
What kind of drugs did he sell to you?
Just pot.
You owed Brian Carrick money for marijuana, correct?
Yes.
Is that a yes?
Yes. Pete told us that he saw Mario and Brian near the rear door of Vale's. Mario and Brian were arguing. Pete could not hear what Brian and Mario were yelling at each other about. He returned to the meat department to clean, and they were still arguing when he left.
On our last episode, we tackled the difficult question of motive. We learned that both Mario and Rob had reason to harm Brian, and they were both working at Vale's on the night of the murder. So the question is, which one of these motives compelled one of our suspects to take Brian's life? Over the next few episodes, we will hear from the employees who were working at Vale's on the evening of December 20th, 2002. At least 9 of the 14 employees saw Brian in the store that night. Those employees can account for Brian's whereabouts for the entire time he was in the store. Most of those employees were called to testify. They each told their part of the story, but neither side was able to develop a coherent timeline based on the information they provided. Mario's attorney pointed out why this was such a difficult task.
When you talk about all of the witnesses that they have mentioned that saw Brian, what they didn't say is everyone that saw him at a different time, and every witness says something that contradicts another witness.
Some of these conflicting statements Mario's attorney was referring to will stand out to you like a sore thumb. Others will be more subtle. To resolve these conflicts, it's going to take a keen eye for detail and some rigorous reasoning, but it is doable. As we shift our attention to the stories of the people who were working at Vale's that night, we have a couple of tips that will help you unravel this mystery. Number 1. Don't rely too heavily on these time estimates provided by witnesses. Instead, focus on the content of what they're saying. As people worked through their shifts that night, they weren't keeping a detailed log marking down exact times for when things happened. The details of what they saw and heard is what's going to help you put this puzzle together. And number 2, don't dismiss the message because you don't like the messenger. Just because a witness isn't credible doesn't mean the information they're providing isn't true. Look for corroborating evidence for all claims, regardless of who's making them. With that said, we'll start today with one of the most perplexing witnesses this case has to offer, Peter DiPiero. In December of 2002, Peter DiPiero was 79 years old. He worked part-time at Vale's Foods. Pete's job was to clean the meat department every night after the meat cutters had gone home for the day. On December 28, 2002, a McHenry County detective interviewed Pete at his home.
Pete, the reason we're following up with you is because we've obtained information from some of your coworkers at Vale's. They told us you may have witnessed an argument in the store last Friday. Can you tell us about what you saw that night?
Yeah, I saw Mario and Brian arguing outside the back exit door where the trash is taken out. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but there was a lot of hollering. There wasn't any pushing or shoving, just a lot of arm movement.
Was anyone else present for the argument?
There was a third kid there. He was skinny.
Was he involved in the argument?
No, he was busy taking out the garbage when they were arguing. I don't know who he was.
What time would you estimate you saw this?
Well, I was about halfway done with my cleaning, so I would say about 6 p.m.
And why didn't you tell us any of this when we talked to you 2 days ago?
I didn't want to get involved with it.
At the end of their interview with Pete, the officers noted that Pete expressed concern about what would happen to him if anyone found out he was talking to the police. At that point, Pete told the officers that he wasn't certain he witnessed the argument on Friday, December 20th, 2002. He said he could have seen Mario and Brian arguing on Wednesday or Thursday. The officer got the sense Pete was trying to recant his statement in an attempt to distance himself from the investigation and he noted that in his report. To the detectives working the case, this certainly seemed like the big break they had been waiting for. They now had a witness who was telling them one of their prime suspects was engaged in an argument with the victim at the back of the grocery store on the night of the murder. The detectives believed the third person Pete saw, whom he described as a skinny kid, was Rob Render. They believed Rob was in the wrong place at the wrong time and witnessed something he shouldn't have. He was then threatened and forced into helping with the cleanup that night. Pete's story served as the foundational piece of the state's theory. He testified before the grand jury at Mario's perjury trial and at both murder trials. Every time Pete was asked to testify, his story changed in significant ways. Was the state's foundational piece flawed? To find out, we're really going to take our time to go over each of Pete's transcripts. We will start with Pete's testimony before the grand jury in 2007.
Could you state your name for the grand jury?
Peter DePiero. I have no middle name.
And you were born on February 18th, 1923?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you some questions about December 20th of 2002, the night you were working at Val's grocery store.
Correct.
Do you remember working that Saturday night? That Friday night and seeing Brian Carrick in the store?
Yes.
Do you remember what shift you were working that night?
4 to 7.
And that's 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.?
Correct.
Do you remember seeing Brian Carrick having an argument with Mario Cachero?
Correct.
Where were Brian and Mario standing when they were arguing?
On the southeast corner in the back of the grocery store.
The door that you saw them arguing at, is that at the rear of the store where the trash is taken out?
Correct.
And is that near the produce cooler?
Correct.
Were there two other boys standing near Mario and Brian when they were arguing?
Yes, they were behind him. I couldn't make out who they were. I think they may have been the stock boys that worked there that night.
When you say they were standing behind, who were they standing behind?
Standing behind Brian and Mario.
What made you think that Brian and Mario were arguing?
Why did I think?
Uh-huh.
They were going like this, back and forth to each other. Looked like an argument to me.
When you demonstrated, did you mean that they had, Brian and Mario, had their hands out to their sides?
You know how you can tell it's an argument from a distance instead of just normally talking? You know, most people talk with their hands this way or that way. They were going like this, like it was an argument.
So their hands were out and they were moving their hands around?
Yeah.
Were both Mario and Brian doing that with their hands?
I'm not sure, but I know Mario was.
What were the other two boys doing that you saw?
They were standing right close by them, behind. I couldn't make out who they were. I would think they were stock boys, unless Brian brought two guys in with him, which I doubt.
What made you look over at Brian and Mario?
I just happened to glance that way, bringing boxes out to the crusher, and I seen him there, and I didn't pay no more attention after what I told you, and when I came in Saturday, I heard he was missing.
When you came to work the next day, you knew he was missing?
Yes.
From what people were saying?
Uh-huh.
When you were bringing boxes out, were you taking them... Where were you taking the boxes?
To the crusher, where they crush them. There was a couple of boxes I forgot.
When you looked at them, were you near the meat cooler?
Right. I was walking right out the meat department. Where they were at was down the hall. I could not hear. My hearing is not that great.
How close to the time you left work that day do you think that argument was?
How close? Within my last hour and a half, I would say.
Okay. Did you ever see Brian Carrick again after you saw him arguing with Mario?
Well, it was the last time I ever seen Brian in my life.
What did you think of Brian?
Nice kid. He used to come in there and say, "Hey, Grandpa, you need a hand in the butcher shop." He'd always help.
All in all, Pete's testimony before the grand jury was essentially the same story he told the detectives 4.5 years earlier. One notable difference between Pete's testimony and his original statement was that Pete testified that he saw four people outside the exit door. He saw Mario and Brian, but couldn't make out who the other two people were. In Pete's original statement to the police, he only mentioned one other person besides Mario and Brian. It could be Pete simply forgot to relay the detail about a fourth person to the detectives, or maybe they just didn't document Pete's statements accurately in the report. If there were two other people present, who were they, and why weren't they talking to the police?
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Late nights at work taking a toll on your skin? Do you find yourself staring at those dark circles in the mirror? Well, it's time to meet your new best friend, Dark Circle Defense Balm from Lumen. Lumen is a line of brilliant men's skincare solutions crafted especially for men who want to look and feel their brightest. Whether you're a seasoned skincare pro or a total newbie, Lumen Skin has got you covered. Lumen's Dark Circle Defense Balm is a lightweight gel that absorbs seamlessly into your skin to brighten your under eyes and instantly plump dehydration lines. It's basically an espresso shot for your eyes. The best part? Lumen will let listeners of this podcast try the product out for free. Yes, you heard that right. Free. Head to lumenskin.com/Wondery and get your free trial of Dark Circle Defense and their other amazing products now. Say goodbye to tired-looking eyes and say hello to a new and refreshed you. Don't wait any longer. Your skin will thank you. That's lumenskin.com/Wondery for your free trial.
In August of 2009, Mario was facing perjury charges for lying during his grand jury testimony. The state considered Pete to be one of their key witnesses at his trial. Pete's testimony was a game changer once again, only this time his testimony helped Mario.
Sir, I'm going to ask you. On December 20th of 2002, were you working that evening?
Yes, I was.
And I'm going to draw your attention, sir, to approximately 6 p.m. on December 20th of 2002. Where were you in Val's store?
At what time?
Approximately 6 p.m.
In the butcher shop.
And can you tell the judge what you recall seeing on December 20th of 2002 at approximately 6 p.m.?
What I was doing?
Well, let's start with that. What were you doing?
I was dumping garbage out the back.
And when you say you were dumping garbage out the back, is there a back door there?
Yes, that's the opposite side of where I supposedly had seen Brian and three other fellas.
Okay. Let's take a step back, sir. What did you see on December 20th of 2002 at approximately 6 p.m.?
What I seen? Right now that I thought it all over. I can't be 100% sure because I had glaucoma and I had cataracts, which I didn't know I had the cataracts at the time, and I didn't wear no glasses because of the steam in the butcher shop when I was cleaning stuff. It would frost them all up. So, when I thought it over a few times, outside of the butcher shop, beyond the case, I have had deals with distances like where I thought I seen somebody and I was wrong. It was somebody else when I got closer.
Okay. Sir, I'm going to...
I can't be 100% sure. Not 100% sure that it was Brian and what's his name. When I seen these people out the butcher shop that I thought was somebody, and I walked up close, and I was wrong, I had my glasses on.
Would the state like the court to address the witness?
If you could, Your Honor.
That's the truth.
Mr. DiPiero, I've gotten that point. Sir, you have indicated on several occasions that at this time you are not 100% sure of what you saw. Could you please answer the state's question as to what you thought you saw in the past?
In the past? You mean before?
What you indicated that you previously saw that you are now not sure of.
Well, I've had these cataracts.
No. Tell me what you thought you saw on December 20th.
Mario and Brian.
State, you can continue.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The judge intervened during the state's questioning and asked Pete to testify to what he previously saw that he's now not sure of. If you're a member of that jury, is there anything Pete could have said after that question was asked by the judge that would have helped you get over the hurdle of reasonable doubt? Ultimately, Pete's testimony led the judge to throw out the perjury charges against Mario. The state just didn't have the evidence to convict Mario of perjury. Even if Pete was confident in what he saw that night, if it's true that he had glaucoma and cataracts and glasses that he wasn't wearing, Pete's original story just isn't very reliable. Mario's attorney sought to hammer this point home during his cross-examination.
And with respect to your physical condition at that point in time, what was wrong with your eyes?
What was wrong with my eyes?
Yes.
I had glaucoma, and I had cataracts, which I had taken out afterwards.
And you wear glasses, is that correct?
Correct.
And did you wear glasses back then?
I never wore glasses in the butcher shop because of the steam.
But you had a prescription for glasses back then, correct?
I was what?
You had a prescription for the glasses back then.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't have the glasses on you when you went to take those boxes out, is that right?
I never had glasses on in the butcher shop there because when I leave them on, they would steam all up from the steam cleaning the stuff. And I took them off and I left them off.
Okay. Approximately how far a distance would you say it was from the door you were going out of to the door where you said you saw the people having a conversation?
Where they were at?
Yes, approximately how far, in feet, or this courtroom, if you wish to point out something.
Quite a ways. Almost the full distance of the store, except for maybe 20 feet. The store's pretty big. It's quite a distance.
The state never questioned the veracity of Pete's claims about his eyesight. Instead, they argued the reason Pete was highlighting these things now was because Mario's brother Eugene threatened him a week before he testified.
In the past week, sir, have you had a conversation with the defendant Mario Cachero's brother, Eugene Cachero?
Yes, I did.
And, sir, during that conversation with Eugene Cachero, it occurred at a track of some sort or off-track betting parlor. Is that correct?
Right.
And during that conversation, did Eugene Cachero bring your attention to this case and bring your attention that you may not have been wearing your glasses on December 20th of 2002?
Pete wasn't allowed to answer the question due to an objection that was sustained by the judge, but Mario's attorney did address the issue during his cross-examination.
Has anyone forced or coerced you into your testimony today?
Is what?
Has anyone forced you or threatened you regarding your testimony today?
I can't hear you from there, same as I couldn't hear them.
Has anyone forced or threatened you in your testimony today?
Forced me?
Has anyone forced you or threatened you regarding your testimony today?
No.
Okay. And did this conversation that you had with Eugene Cachero influence your testimony in any way today?
Not that I know of.
In fact, you approached him at the track, did you not?
We always sit together at that. We're friends.
Okay. So it wasn't anything unusual that you sat there and talked about things, correct?
No, that's when he asked me if I wore glasses. It's true, I didn't wear glasses in the butcher shop, never.
When Mario's brother asked Pete if he wore glasses, was it part of a veiled threat? Possibly, but what really matters is whether or not these things were true about his eyesight. If it's true that Pete had problems with his vision, that's something we have to consider as we analyze his testimony. When Pete testified at Mario's second murder trial, his story would change again. As Pete took the stand, this happened.
Judge, my doctor told me to give you that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Judge, for the records, I understand that this witness just tendered to the court something with respect to his doctor. I would ask an opportunity to see what it is and let Mr. Combs and the prosecutor see what it is, because it may affect his...
Both attorneys can view the envelope that has been tendered to the court. The court has not looked at it.
Judge, if I may, apparently we have a report from one of his doctors who I guess reaches a conclusion that the patient has mild cognitive impairment. We'll repeat 30-point screening. If scores decline, we'll start with a memory pill.
So in addition to all of Pete's problems with his vision, he was also diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment. Not exactly the qualities you're looking for in a witness. Here is what Pete testified to at Mario's second murder trial.
Okay, do you remember the day you last saw Brian Carrick?
The day...
No, do you just remember it?
Oh, it was when they went back talking. Three people back there talking.
Okay, who were the people?
Shane and Mario and... I don't know the third one. I don't know. I couldn't see him. And the kid.
Brian Carrick?
Brian, yeah.
Okay, did they appear to be arguing?
Huh?
Did they appear to be arguing?
Well, I can't tell you for sure if they're arguing, because a lot of Italian people use their hands when they talk, so I didn't hear that. I cannot be sure of that 100%.
Do you remember what time you saw Brian, Shane, and Mario in the back? Do you remember the time of day?
It would have to be between 5 and 7.
And here was Mario's attorney's cross-examination.
You're 90 years old, correct?
Huh?
You're 90. You're 90 years old.
Plus 3 months.
Okay. And you're suffering from memory problems, correct?
Right.
Last year when you testified, you never told the judge that Shane Lamb was there, correct?
Shane
was not there, correct?
He wasn't there when I testified the last time.
No, I mean when you were at Val's and you were looking down that hallway, you never saw Shane Lamb there.
Oh, yes, I did see Shane.
Okay.
I seen Shane. I seen everybody but the third guy because I couldn't see him.
Okay. Who is Shane Lamb?
Huh?
Who is Shane Lamb?
I don't know.
Pete went on to testify that he couldn't remember a single thing he previously testified to due to the problems he was having with his memory. Instead of continuing with their questioning, the parties agreed to let the jury read the transcripts documenting what Pete previously testified to. As the jurors reviewed Pete's previous statements, they would see that he never mentioned seeing Shane that night. Before Pete spoke to the detectives, he told his co-workers in the meat department about what he had witnessed that night. One of the co-workers Pete spoke to was Dominic, the same employee who was looking to buy Xboxes from Brian.
Pete told you he saw Brian and Mario.
Right.
He never told you there were two other guys there.
Never told me that. Nope.
He never told you that one of them was Shane Lamb. That's for sure, right?
Nope. He never said that. Not to me.
He never said the other guy was Render or...
No, sir.
Or Keppel or Eddie Carrick or anyone else. Right?
Just those two names that I had mentioned. That was it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling t-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery.
In the earliest version of Pete's story, he only saw Brian and Mario arguing outside the exit door. On other occasions, he said there might have been 3 or 4 or even 5 people present. Pete gave inconsistent statements regarding who it was he saw Brian arguing with and how many people were present for the confrontation. When Pete testified in 2009, he told the jury that,
"I can't be 100% sure, not 100% sure that it was Brian and what's his name?"
Pete was referring to Mario there. Some people might be tempted to ignore Pete's testimony in its entirety, but there were a few things he was consistent on over the years. He was confident he saw Brian in a heated argument during the last hour of his shift. The investigation would show that the time Pete claimed to have witnessed this argument was right around the same time Brian went back to the store. Pete was also consistent as to where he saw this argument take place: outside of the southeast exit door. This was the same door the detectives found blood on when they searched the store on December 22nd of 2002. It would be a remarkable coincidence if Pete got the time and place right for the crime, if he were making it all up. We think Pete did witness something significant that night, but to figure out who Brian was arguing with, we can't rely solely on Pete for that. Thankfully, there is another approach we can take that will tell us exactly who Brian was arguing with. Pete said the argument he witnessed took place just outside of the southeast exit door. Where Pete saw this is perhaps the most significant detail in Pete's story, and here's why. The only reason that door would be open, on a cold December night, was if the stock boys were taking out the garbage. There was a procedure in place at Vail's for taking out the trash. This was something the stock boys did every night around the same time. So, knowing where this argument took place can help us narrow down the time frame for when the argument occurred. Also, if we can answer the question, who took out the garbage that night, we will know who was present for the argument Pete witnessed. The garbage procedures at Vail's worked like this. Around 4:30 p.m., the manager would go around the back of the store and lock all of the rear exit doors. This was done because there were no deliveries expected during the evening hours. The doors were also locked in the evening to help prevent theft. The garbage was taken out around 6:30 p.m. There were 9 garbage bins located throughout the store. 5 were from the deli, 2 from the meat department, 1 from receiving, and 1 from the produce section. After the stock boys had gathered all of the trash near the rear exit door, they would walk to the front of the store and ask the manager for the keys to open the back door. Most of the time, the manager would give the keys to the stock boy to open the rear exit door, and the stock boys would return the keys to the manager once they were done. Occasionally, the manager would keep the keys, open the back door, and supervise the stock boys as they took out the garbage. Shauna was one of the employees working in the deli on the evening of December 20th, 2002. Her testimony was significant for a few reasons. First of all, the deli was located in the southeast corner of the store, so it was in close proximity to the exit door. Shauna also spoke with Brian that night when he stopped by the deli. And last but not least, she remembered who took out their trash that night.
"Good morning, ma'am. Would you please introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury?"
"My name is Shauna."
"I'd like to bring your attention to December of 2002. Were you employed at that time?"
"Yes, I was."
"Where were you employed?"
"I was employed at Vail's Foods in Johnsburg, Illinois."
"What were your job responsibilities while you worked at Vail's?"
"When I first started there, I was a cashier in the front, so I'd ring out customers after they selected their groceries. And then once I was 17, I was able to work back in the deli where you would slice the meats and cheeses for the customers."
"Did you see Brian on December 20th of 2002?
"I did, yes."
"Okay. Where'd you see him?"
"He came by the deli to see if our garbages needed to be dumped, because that was the stock boys. They would come and dump our garbages for us."
"Okay. And when he came back there, did he ask you anything?"
"He did offer to sell us some weed, and we declined. And then I didn't see him after that."
"All right. How many people were back there when he offered to sell you guys marijuana?"
"I think there was a couple of us. There was 3 of us back there."
"All right. Did anybody take him up on his offer?"
"Not that I saw in front of me."
Brian was notorious for showing up at Vail's and working while he was off duty. If he saw something that needed to be done while he was there, he would help out. Whether it was bagging groceries, helping bring in carts, or even helping with the trash, he just jumped in and did it. Mario's attorney asked Shauna the following during the cross-examination.
"Did you say that Brian was working that night and he came in and took care of the trash? Did I hear that?"
I don't know. I don't think he was working. I think he just came in to get his check."
"Okay.
because I hadn't remembered seeing him all night until he came to ask us if we needed our garbage dumped.
Okay, but did he ask you if you needed him to dump the garbage?
Yeah, it had already been dumped, but he asked us if we needed it done.
And it was done by Rob Render, correct?
Correct.
And you told them that Rob came in and got the trash, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And when you saw Brian, he was by himself, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And when you were asked about when you saw Brian, you told the police it was around the middle of my shift. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And now that you're thinking about it, do you remember that it was Rob that went and got the trash?
Rob had originally dumped our trash. Yes.
When was that?
It was before Brian had come over by us because the garbage cans were empty by the time Brian came over.
Shauna testified that Rob took out their trash that night. If that's true, then Rob definitely would have been present for the argument Pete witnessed. But consider this. Shauna stated that when Brian stopped by the deli and offered to help with the trash, their garbage had already been taken out. Did Brian leave the argument that Pete witnessed alive? Think about the implications if that were true. If the garbage had already been taken out and that back door was locked for the night, how did the killer get Brian's body out of the store? There's no way someone would have been able to get Brian's body out through the main entrance unnoticed. The only way Brian's body could have left Vail's that night was if he was taken out through the rear exit door. Did someone get the keys from the manager a second time in order to get Brian's body out of there? Who would have been in a better position to make such a request? The son of an owner or the stock boy suspected of stealing liquor from the grocery store? Lorenzo was the manager on duty that night.
I recall that just before 7 p.m. on the night Brian Carrick went missing, I gave the key to the southeast exit door padlock to a stock boy. At the time I gave the key to the stock boy, I was helping a cashier close out a register. I'm pretty sure I gave the key to Rob Render, but I'm not 100% sure.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Framed ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.